But I do get excited. Like right now, this morning, I was looking around and I am excited to see the thistles in the paddock because I know it means hay in the paddock. It's protecting grasses that I know can recover while nothing's going to touch it while the thistles are there. And then when the thistles die down, this helped me this year, 18, thistles die down and there's a whole crop of grass underneath ready to go. So my auntie, rest in peace, used to always say thistles were like hay in the paddock, and I can see that now.
The Biological Farming Roundtable podcast helps farmers explore innovative, low-input, regenerative and profitable farming systems. The Biological Farming Roundtable is sponsored by Nutrisoil, an award-winning biological liquid fertiliser made from a big worm farm. Nutrisoil's purpose is to empower farmers to produce life-enriching food. My name is Nicola Maddock. I work at Nutrisoil. I envisage a future where farmers are rewarded for producing nutrient-rich foods and consumers have this easily available to them. Today I'm interviewing Brooke French, a very dear friend of mine since our early teens. Brooke, along with her daughter Katie, who is 13, operate a 932-acre sheep and cattle property in Brungle Creek, New South Wales. 2 years ago, Brooke began to question how she operated her farm. She was a devoted herbicide user and took great pleasure in seeing her weeds die, but they kept coming back again. Through connections and friendships, Brooke started hearing about holistic management and how weeds were being reduced naturally without the monopoly of comeback that she experienced repeatedly. To farm holistically, Brooke has developed herself mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. In the 2018 drought, Brooke did not feed out at all. This is my conversation with the amazing Brooke French. Hey, Brooke, how are you going?
Good, Nicola, yourself?
Yeah, very well. Very cool. Very cool to have you here on this evening, staying over at my house with your daughter, Katie.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, it's past nine, so like it's past our bedtime. So. Hopefully you don't fall asleep while we're doing this podcast. But anyway, I'd love to talk to you about your farm. I highly respect what you do. So let's talk. Tell us a bit about it.
So I own 932 acres in Brungle Creek, which is between Tumut and Gundagai. I run sheep and cattle. It's undulating to hilly country, a lot of clay, red clay soils. Our average rainfall is around 32 inches, which is 800 mil. This year we've only got just under 500 mil, so we're a fair bit behind like everyone else, but very grateful for what we've had.
Yeah, right. So how long have you been on the farm?
I bought the farm January 8 years ago, actually, nearly 8 years.
Yeah, right. Okay. And you've lived in the area most of your life, like your dad was a farmer.
And still is, yes. So Dad lives just down the road. We actually join our paddocks, join out the back, which is great. Very handy to have Dad there. I call him my unpaid manager.
Yeah, absolutely. You said you've only had just over half, really, of your rainfall this year. It's been a drought. Everyone's sort of feeling it at the moment. Have you ever experienced a drought like this in your lifetime before?
In my lifetime, yes, but not in my time as farming. So I didn't really feel the pain of it, yeah, prior to now because it was never my responsibility before. It was Dad's farm, and I did have a smaller farm with my daughter's father, and we did it tough 1 year and I was pregnant with my daughter and we had cattle out on the road. So it was a bit tough that year, but nothing compared to what I'm going through now. We didn't have the numbers or, not the severity.
How'd you manage this year?
Good. I didn't have to feed, which I'm very happy and proud of. Not feeding is definitely what I'm aiming for because hand feeding is not part of my lifestyle.
Have you ever had to hand feed?
No.
Generally in your area, do people hand feed?
Yes, there were a lot of people hand feed. Well, everyone around me, actually, I could safely say was hand feeding this year.
Buying in hay or cutting their own?
A lot was bought in. Dad did feed some of his own, but yeah, most were buying in, but of course they were the ridiculous prices that Feed was reaching this year.
Mm, yep. So you haven't had to buy hay. What else have you done to manage this drought?
I definitely believe I can contribute to the holistic grazing that I started 2 years ago. I had a friend who I camp draft with, Dean Han, who I knew was managing thistles without spraying, and that idea of that caught my attention. So I went down to the place that he's managing. He showed me around and explained it all to me. Gorman's own it down Mundalo Road. And it just blew my mind. It was all so foreign to me, but I was so fascinated and I couldn't get enough of it. So that was 2 years ago, and it was a really good, it was about December, it was a really good year. And I just put everything into the one paddock. I think I actually had bloat. I lost a beast to bloat. And I thought, right, my prevention for that is 600 ewes into that paddock to take the gas or the freshness out, and then I put all my cattle in as well. So that's when I first started. And then I enrolled in the holistic management course 6 months later and started that in Holbrook. And that's run through TAFE, and Brian Wahlberg facilitated that. And I just learnt a whole new world, a world that I really didn't know existed prior to Dean exposing me to it. But I can definitely give that credit. Just having paddocks locked up at any one time, recovering, I just noticed an incredible amount of growth in those paddocks. So I know that's what it saved me over, well, these last 12 months.
Yep. So you do have a lot of thistles around your area, don't you? Like, not particularly, I'm saying, on your farm, like,
but I do.
When I went out to your place, I was driving, you know, the roadside, everywhere there's quite a few thistles. And what would you have done previously to manage those thistles?
Definitely sprayed.
Yeah.
Loved spraying. Very satisfied spraying. Now I don't. Now I will say I get excited, not all the time, but I do get excited. Like right now this morning, I was looking around, and I am excited to see the thistles in the paddock because I know it means hay in the paddock. It's protecting grasses that I know can recover while nothing's going to touch it while the thistles are there. And then when the thistles die down, this helped me this year, 18. Thistles die down and there's a whole crop of grass underneath ready to go. So my auntie, rest in peace, used to always say thistles were like hay in the paddock. And I can see that now. Before, I was just happy to slaughter those things and have clean paddocks. Now I'm somewhat grateful for them to be there.
Mm. What about your sheep? Like you obviously have wool.
Yeah.
How do you manage that?
Yeah, that and mustering does prove to be difficult. There's a lot more veggie matter in my wool, but I'm happy to sacrifice that, knowing what I'm doing for the land. And then also I have cursed it at various times mustering because I muster on horse with my dogs. It's very time consuming if there's just single tracks through the thistles. But I will look at this year, not slashing it as such, but trampling it either with a machine, like dragging something behind the bike. I do have a lot of rocks in various places, so I'm a bit limited, but I will be doing something this year to make it more accessible in the paddocks for mustering. There's not much I can do about the wool as it is. I just have to be a little bit mindful of where the sheep are at various times, but I do have a lot of Southron thistle.
Does that reduce the money you get for your wool?
Yeah, it does, but it's only crossbred wool anyway, 26, 27 micron, so it's not like I'm going fine wool merino, so I'm happy to sacrifice that. I still get good money for my wool, I'm still happy, but, yeah, I do lose a certain amount due to the amount of thistle in my wool. But I'm happy to see the seeds go off the place with my wool.
Any eye trouble with cattle or anything?
No, I have had pink eye this year a little bit, but I'm not putting it down to thistles because they're not at that height. I think it's more the dust, the dryness. But no, I wouldn't say I've got any more pink eye or eye problems than any other time, no.
Yeah. I know it's only been 2 years, so it might be an unfair question, but have you seen the succession of those thistles reducing in numbers? Sorry, we're in a thunderstorm here at the moment if you just heard that.
What I have noticed, very interesting, and it was Peter Andrews. I had him come and visit probably 2 or 3 months ago now. When I first bought that place, the cabbage thistle, the variegated thistle on top of the sheep camps, on top of my two big hills, was very thick, to the point that riding a horse through, it was as high as me and it was consistently hitting my legs as I rode through. It was that thick. There were just single tracks through. I said to Peter Andrews this year, I said, now, I haven't sprayed this for several years. I did spray it a couple of times, but it just kept coming back. And I said, look at it this year, there's barely anything here. And he said, thistles generally need to run their course. If you continue to spray them, they're not doing their job because you're stopping them doing their job. If you let them run their course, then generally you'll find that they'll disappear on their own. So I have definitely noticed that with the cabbage thistle, not so with the saffron as yet. I did leave a paddock that has a lot of saffron in it, locked up for a long time last year, hoping that there would be too much competition for the saffron to get up. I didn't notice. I was excited at the beginning and then I had a good look in it and I didn't notice any decrease in the amount of thistle. So, no, I haven't noticed anything with the saffron yet, but definitely with the variegated thistle and the sheep camps.
Mm. So this year with the saffron, you're going to be training it?
Yeah.
And mob grazing as much as possible or...?
Yeah, there's various times. I haven't fully gone into that. I've learned a lot of information in this course that I haven't implemented yet. Still implementing piece by piece as I'm ready to tackle it, but that is something that I'm yet to implement. So, no, I'm not ready. I'm ready, but I haven't done it yet.
Yep, yep. Time, money.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fences, water points, what what are your thoughts of the things that you want to do?
So I have, since I started the course, I've split one of my bigger paddocks up and I've put two tree lines in. I haven't planted the trees yet due to the dry spell. So I've got one paddock subdivided. I do plan to subdivide several more. I don't have any intentions of doing temporary fencing. Running over the hills with electric fencing is not part of my daily lifestyle either.
Have you seen it done? In your hilly area, does anyone do it? No.
No one actually in my area, in my direct area, is doing holistic management at all. It's all set stocking or mainly set stocking. I do see people rest a paddock, but that is all it is. It's rest. It's not recovery. Yeah, so no, I haven't seen anyone temporary fencing in my area.
Has anyone been looking over at your farm going, what's Brooke doing differently? What's Brooke up to now?
yeah. I do get the odd comments. I remember, and I took it as a huge compliment. It was, I'm not quite sure of what time of year it is. It was, but one of my neighbours from down further said, geez, you've got a lot of feed. And, yeah, there were people around me that didn't, and I was happy dancing that one. Yeah. And my vet actually, he's consistently saying to me, run more stock. But he's very comfortable hand feeding and he's also very comfortable with no ground cover. And obviously that's not my desired outcome.
Mm.
So, yeah, I am getting a lot of questions. And I have, back in April, I remember saying to someone that I wasn't feeding and I remember them saying, wow, you're doing well to not be feeding this autumn or something. Yeah. So, no, people are noticing.
Yep. Do you ever take the stock off and go droving or?
I did this winter, not big time droving, just up Brungle Creek Road. I think for about 3 or 4 weeks I did this year. My paddocks, were getting bare. I used one as a sacrifice paddock. Well, when I say bare, I don't mean probably what the traditional term of bare means. Bare for me is, still got ground cover but getting really short. So I used one paddock close to the road as a sacrifice paddock and I would put the cattle out daily just to let my paddocks kick away just that little bit more. I wouldn't say I had spare time, but I was doing bookwork in the truck while I had the cattle out on the road and I had a couple of young horses, so it was a perfect situation. But that definitely did, you know, gave me 3 weeks of recovery in all my paddocks. I did keep the steers and I had 4 sets of twins last year, so in my cows. So I kept them and my steers, anything I wanted to sell, in a good paddock at home and just took the rest. And obviously the sheep, I didn't put them out on the road either. But yeah, it definitely made a difference. It just gave me a little bit of leeway, I guess.
Yeah. Do you have to get a permit to do that?
Yeah, I had to get a permit. They were very nice. Considering the season, it was very good rates, yeah, for some roadside grazing, just because it was between my father's place and my place.
What about selling off stock? Have you had to sell any off?
Yes, I have. Yeah, it was a tough decision actually. So, and that's my decision going forward with what we're in at the moment. I sent 6 decks of sheep off probably 2 or 6 to 8 weeks ago now. That was quite a tough decision because approximately 300 of those sheep were my ewes that I'd bred, and that was a big part of my mob. I only have, say, roughly 700 to 800 ewes, and sending 300 of them away, they've all been educated to how I work, and it's been tough because then the majority of my mob now is bought in, and I find it very testing and challenging handling these bought-in sheep. They're quite wild, for want of a better word, and they test myself and the dogs out until we get them used to us. So I will miss those 300. I already do miss those 300 ewes, and then I sold the rest were in lambs. Then I've sent 2 decks of cattle off as well, but I have a lot more cattle to offload. I'm going to really probably try and cut my mob in half once the calves get old enough to wean. And again, I don't want to hand feed the calves to wean them. I'll wait until they're old enough to wean, but I will wean early, which I don't normally do either.
Mm. Yeah. You do self-development.
Yes.
Yeah. So do you think that your coaching that you receive and your self-development general mindset has helped you get through this drought?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely helped me as a person. And then, yeah, I don't have, like, I might get down with, say, lambing, and I have lose a few ewes to prolapse and I get down, but I pick myself up very quickly. And I guess having that growth mindset behind me and the tools to be able to use, well, for my mental state, I guess. So, yeah, I realise that it's a tough time. The dry spell is definitely a tough time, but I think, you know, we just have to be mindful of what opportunities we can make of it and move forward. There's nothing we can do to change it, so we've just got to adapt and move forward. And, I can't imagine it without my personal development.
Yeah. So what is your personal development?
Well, I have quite a personal development ritual each morning.
I love it. I've done it with you.
Yeah, you have too.
I want others to hear about it.
So I start every day with gratitude. I will admit this festive season I have been a little slack because I've been getting outside super early in this heat to get a bit done before it gets too hot. So my personal development, or my morning ritual, has been sacrificed the last week. So gratitude, start every day with a page of gratitude. And I've gone past the writing 3 things. It's a page for me. And I really feel what I write. I read. I definitely don't turn my Wi-Fi on for about the first 2 hours of my day. That's super important to me. Otherwise, I just get distracted responding to messages. Read. I always try to put good in my body, I believe, or good info, I believe. When you're putting good info in, good stuff comes out. So I haven't watched television for 11 years now because I believe it, a lot of it's rubbish, and the news, well, that's, I just find that super depressing. So I refuse to put anything negative into my mind. I review my goals every morning, my short-term, medium, long-term goals. I plan my day, obviously, which then goes into my day, my week, my month. my year. And yeah, just a few other little, sometimes I meditate, sometimes I just fully, I like to start my day with intention. So I like to be really clear on what my day will involve and how that day will run. Obviously, when you've got animals, it doesn't always go to plan. But yeah, if I start my day with intention and if I start it in a good way, focusing on me for the first hour or so, then keeping in mind I get up at 5 o'clock too, so it's not that I get out in the paddock late, it's just I get up extra early to do it. So yeah, if I start my day like that, I know that my day will run a lot smoother than if I happen to sleep in and missed half of that. I can't even imagine what my day, I just don't like it at all.
Yep. So what would a normal day look like for Brooke French?
A normal day, depends if it's 41 degrees or not. A normal day, normal weather would be 5 a.m. start, up, definitely put the kettle on. I only have one cup a day. I'm very mindful of hydration. So one cup of tea and that first one of the morning is my favourite. So that's when I have it. And then straight into my gratitude, my goals, my reading, putting the good stuff into my mind, and then out into the paddock for whatever I've planned for the day. Yeah, it could be a very variable, or it could vary, sorry. Yeah, totally depends on what I'm doing. Sheep, cattle.
I just have to tell the listeners because we're in this really hot box room. There's a storm outside and my dog has storm anxiety. So she's come in and she's panting. So it is not Brooke, it's not me. If you can hear a dog panting, she's just here with us panting. So carry on. You're out in the paddock, Brooke.
Yeah. So look, it could involve so many things, whether it's patching fences, whether it's moving stock or marking calves, marking lambs, yeah, so many different things. And then I try to, which I'm very far behind at the moment, try to squeeze in some bookwork there as well. Yeah, plus I have I'm a big believer of the work-life balance, so I also make sure I take time for me. So whether it's going over to Wagga to take my daughter out on a date night because she's at boarding school now, or I do dance lessons, so yeah, it just depends what's on as to how my day unfolds. But
alcohol, you gave up alcohol maybe 14 months ago.
Yes.
Yeah. What was your reason for that? Has that helped you with your farming and your mindset or hydration?
Hydration was the reason I gave it up. Became very focused on not dehydrating myself, I guess. I heard somewhere that if you on a cruise actually with a naturopath in America, and he said for every cup of tea, coffee, alcohol or soft drink you have, you should have 6 glasses of water to counteract the dehydration. I was like, whoa, right. That's where the one cup of tea a day came in. And I was never a big soft drinker unless I mixed it with alcohol, but I thought, right, I would have a couple of ciders of an afternoon now and then. So I started cutting that back, and then I started cutting back less when I'd go out, and then eventually I just gave it up because I thought, what's the point? I hydrate all day and then I dehydrate every time I have a drink. So I just stopped it. It was the best decision I've ever made and I've never looked back. Look, I don't know that it helps me run my farm better because it's not, I wasn't an excessive drinker. So, but in my well-being, for sure, I feel amazing all the time. I don't ever wake up groggy unless I haven't had enough sleep. And yeah, so I guess you get more days on the farm because there's no hangovers from if you've had a night out. Yeah.
Yep. And you know, you have that afternoon drink and then you don't want to go out exactly and do the evening work.
That's right. Yeah. So yeah, very happy to be water being the only thing I put in my mouth.
Yeah. With your business coaching, you have found a way to diversify your farm and get more income in. Do you want to tell us about the plans for that?
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. I decided, it was actually after my 40th, my girlfriend cleaned the shearing shed out for me because it looked like it was going to rain, and we had a band and Nicola's hubby, actually, Darren, as the
sticky undies.
As the van. So I looked at the shearing shed after my 40th and I thought, wow, what a great space. This is not getting utilized to its full potential. And I thought of starting an Airbnb. And I've since been contacted by, or a friend up north put her on to me, a lady that wants to run a horse riding experience and offer the real horse experience, cattle mustering, to European tourists, but also to Aussies. So, yeah, I've decided to jump on board with Horse Happening, and we're going to, well, hopefully crank up early this year, early next year, 2019.
Yeah.
And we'll get some external income happening, which will help make up for the amount of stock that I'm going to sell for this dry time. I'll have a extra supplement to my income to, yeah, keep things ticking along, keep the bank manager happy. So, yeah, I'm very excited about that. That'll be accommodation in the shearing shed and then horse riding.
Where are your customers coming from?
Well, according to Jackie, the lady that I'm marketing with, yeah, from all over the world. So it'll be European tourists, but she's also talking China, Germany. Yeah, I think it's endless. Like, I think the possibilities are endless, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So you'll have an agent and that will be advertised worldwide.
Yeah, that's right. And she'll do all the marketing for me.
Yeah. Will you go out riding with them?
I'll be riding with them, yeah, for sure. And, yeah, so we'll be mustering my stock. Yeah, whatever needs to do, I'll try and incorporate that, obviously, when they're there to get maximum benefit out of that.
You do a lot on the farm with your horses. You would rarely use a bike, is that right?
I'd check on a bike. If I've got to do a quick job, I go check on a bike. I make a point of not, well, I sometimes bend it, but very rare for me to move stock on a bike. I like the stock to be nice and quiet so that when I'm on the bike, I can literally ride straight past them without them moving, especially my ewes, because I like to check my ewes when they're lambing. And if I was mustering on the bike, I believe they wouldn't be as quiet for me as they are now. Like, I can, you can be laying down with a lamb 5 to 10 meters away, or not even 10, 5 meters away, and she will not get up when I ride through on a bike. And I don't believe that would be the case if I was mustering on the bike. So I check on the bike and muster or move stock on the horse. And I believe using a horse, and there'll be a lot of people growling when I say this, I believe you have quieter stock because I use a horse. They're not raced to the yards. Everything is moved slowly, sometimes too slowly. They drive me insane. They're too quiet. But yeah, I do pride myself on my stock. They are nice and quiet, and I don't tolerate anything different, really. If anything's mad, it goes to the sale yards.
Yep. So how far away do you think you are from your first customer?
Well, I've got lots of people lining up to be guinea pigs, and that will happen. Well, it's already happened, and it will happen over the next couple of months. My new goal now is March. My business/life coach, Sally Holden, will keep me accountable for that. Uh-huh. So, yeah, we'll work on that one.
Yeah, so going into that, if someone wanted to get into this life coaching or get into just like self-development, what's your advice?
Wow, good question.
And why did you start? When did you start? Why did you start?
I started about 11, 12 years ago. Possibly now. It was actually very random. I was working at a pub. I'd had my daughter and I went to pub work so my partner could have her of a night and I would look after her during the day. Anyway, I came home late one night, was wide awake, flicked on the television, and I happened to watch The Secret. It happened to be on, and I barely watched television. Well, I never watched it at that hour. And yeah, so it just went from there, and then I couldn't get enough. I had an insatiable thirst for the power of the mind, and I still do. So yeah, it all started back then, and just reading good books. And I, as I said, I don't watch television. I don't listen to the radio. Yeah, I barely listen to the radio. I sometimes listen to music, but mainly it's a podcast going in my ears or an audio book. Whenever I go to conferences, seminars, workshops, I take a voice recorder, yes, always with permission, and then I transfer that to my iPod, and I have cordless earphones in, and that is going in my ears nearly 24/7 or all my waking hours. Yeah. So, look, if anyone wanted to get into personal development, which I thoroughly recommend, it's life-changing. Oh, I don't even know where to start.
It was part of you actually buying this farm, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was
visualization. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a whole nother story. But, yeah, I definitely wouldn't have – I would not be where I am today with what I have created in my life if it wasn't for going down the personal development road, just believing that I could do it as a single parent going to buy, you know, just under 1,000 acres on my own. Definitely a big, big thank you to my personal growth.
Yeah.
I can't imagine life without it, to be honest.
What book are you reading at the moment?
Well, I have to mention, I've just put it down. I've just finished The Queen's Code, which I think you are.
I'm reading it now. I love it. Yep.
An amazing book by Alison Armstrong. Understanding men and women, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's life-changing.
Absolutely.
In itself. I can thoroughly recommend that to every man and woman out there.
Yeah.
We can't speak highly enough of it. I've got two books on the go at the moment, and one is Daring Greatly by Brené Brown and the other is 12 Rules for Life by Jordan Peterson. I am a bit of a book jumper, so whatever I happen to feel like at the time, but they're the two going at the moment and I love both of them.
Yep. Brené Brown, very big on vulnerability.
Yes.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Daring to Lead, is that one you're reading at the moment?
No, I have been recommended that one as well. Daring Greatly, this Daring one Greatly. Is, and yep. It's very much focused on vulnerability.
Yep.
Which will be perfect for going into this dry spell, no doubt.
Yeah. And The Queen's Code, guys, if you want your wife to understand you, it is a gift that you should purchase.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't it's it be a great gift, you know?
Oh, for every man and woman. And then you read it yourself too, men.
Yep.
What do they say? It's about frog farming.
Yep.
Some women turn frogs into princes and some women, or most women, turn princes into frogs. And this is how to stop emasculating men.
Yep.
But it's a fascinating book and it's already helped me. I'm ready to turn around and read it again, or all the highlighted parts anyway. But isn't it amazing for just relating not just your partner but any males around you?
Yep.
I've noticed a massive difference.
Honestly, like with my husband, I'm like, oh, why does he do that? And I read the book and I'm like, all men do that?
Yeah.
Really? And then you just have so much more patience.
So
and then
much more understanding.
You see why they're doing
yes.
it and you work with it.
Yes.
You know, they're very single focused. We're very multi tasked, you know,
exactly.
and to try and get them to have a conversation as quickly as we can have a conversation, forget it. Yeah.
Oh, it's fascinating.
Teaching me lots. Guys, get this book for your wife. It's called The Queen's Code.
The Queen's Code by Alison Armstrong. Mm. And it is hard to track down. The hard copy is hard to track down, but it's achievable online. Just don't stop until it's in your mailbox.
Yep, absolutely. Cool. So low input. You are so low input. Like you don't even use herbicide anymore.
No. I am low input these days, which is great. So I haven't supered. Well, I'm only early days with that, but it's probably 3 years now since I've supered. And
is that challenging to stop doing that?
No, it wasn't. The thought, I did have Dad saying, oh, it'll be interesting to see if you can fatten stop in about 5 years' time. So, you know, it's still time will tell for me.
They're saying, will the phosphorus deplete, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, that'll be a time for tell. It definitely wasn't challenging for me because I'd probably only done it two or three times in those, I'd done it twice, I think, back then, which was probably 5 years. So I just thought of the bill. That alone, only my place is small compared to a lot, but that was nearly 30 grand or 26 grand alone. So just when I think of that amount not going out is nice. Obviously, it's generally always something else that it goes on. But and chemical, no. So I don't use sprays anymore. I would like to do something with my berries and I possibly will do something with my berries. But, I don't spray anymore. So I save a lot of money there as well, which is nice.
Yeah, and you've seen no reduction in stock health, stock weight gain?
Definitely not. No, I haven't noticed any difference except a bit of extra time mustering with the thistle. Yeah.
What about drenching? Do you regularly drench or as needed?
Yeah, as needed. I used to actually only drench on demand with the cattle, but I've since been advised by my vet due to liver fluke that to drench. So I do egg counts, mainly with my sheep. The egg counts and the cows get drenched once a year when we preg test. But, yeah, I drench on egg counts. But I have noticed a significant reduction with my ewes. Like come lambing 2 years ago, I had very low egg counts. I can't remember exactly what they were, but we did drench, but that was very broad. No, I didn't drench the singles. Sorry, drenched the twins. And this year the twins were nearly so low that we nearly weren't going to drench the twins, twin ewes, but I did just because I didn't want a problem later on during lambing. But I haven't drenched the maiden ewes pre-lambing. Not the maiden ewes, the single bearing ewes pre-lambing for the last 2 years because the egg counts were so low, like well under 100.
Fantastic.
I think the twins were only at 120. Yeah, so that I've definitely noticed that, and that would be because they're grazing on higher grass.
Yep.
For sure. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, Brooke, I've loved chatting with you. We'll call the show a night, but I'm sure you and me will keep talking. Well, no, we'll probably go to bed.
Yeah, it's past 7:00.
We'll catch up in the morning. But thank you so much. It's been great.
Thank you, Nicola. It's been an absolute honour. I also want to add, you know, I have learned a lot. I still have so much to learn. And I've also, yeah, I've learned a lot that I still need to implement. So I'm by no stretch qualified or definitely haven't learned it all yet, but I'm out there, I'm having a crack, and I'm keen to learn as much as I can to keep moving forward with the regenerative farming.
Yep.
It's exciting.
Yep, absolutely. You're out in the arena.
I'm out in the arena.
Where no one else is out there in your area.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So you lead the way, girl.
Oh, thanks.
All right, see you later.
Bye.
Please follow the Biological Farming Roundtable podcast. Share it with your friends and networks. I'm Nicola Maddick and I work at Nutrisoil, a liquid biological fertiliser made from a big worm farm whose purpose is to empower farmers to produce life-enriching food.